listening to KMIH Mercer Island, and I'm Chloe Yang. Four women rowing the Pacific Ocean completely unassisted will be taking on the world's toughest row, navigating 2,800 miles from Monterey, California to Kauai, Hawaii. Hannah Bird, one of the rowers, and her teammates will take off this summer on June 12th and expect to reach their destination in Hawaii in mid-July. Thank you so much for coming on the radio, and welcome to KMIH, Hannah.
Hi.
Thank you so much for coming on, especially in this early morning. But you were mentioning that you just got off of a row and just came back yesterday from that. Can you talk a little bit about what your training is like?
Ooh, yeah, so it's been a two-year training process so far, a mixture of on-land training and then also on-water training as well. When we're on land, we're rowing about 4 days a week on like a rowing machine, 2 hour, 1 hour increments, things like that, lifting about 4 days a week. And then I'm also an ultra runner, so I typically run about 3 days as well. And then on water training, we're typically rowing about 14 hours a day each. It's a lot of rowing, but it's actually just so much fun, like being on the water. It's insane. This past training row, we did a 3 day row and then some recovery and then another 3 day row. And we ended up getting hit by like 25 mile per hour winds. And once we caught that on the bow, we started just flying down the coastline. And it was actually the most fun I've ever had in like the most terrifying way as well.
That's crazy. I play on the school golf team, and at most, our exercise is walking. We don't run. We don't really do anything. So that definitely sounds like a lot, especially the rowing for 14 hours. Can you talk a little bit about how you manage to row for 14 hours? Because I'm sure that takes a lot of training to work up to.
It definitely does. Luckily, I've actually been rowing since the eighth grade. And I was on the U17 national team when I was in high school as well, and then ended up rowing at the University of Tennessee, go Vols. So I rowed basically my entire life, moved to Hawaii, got into ocean rowing out in Hawaii, and then about 2 years ago, decided to do this competition, and it's just been an experience, I would say, just gradually building up to it. At most, I was used to rowing for 2 hours a day max. And then just the past 2 years, it's been a progressive build up to get to the point of being able to row 14 hours with no recovery.
Yeah, it's pretty insane. I know that there are two types of ocean rowing boats that rowers compete in, the open class and the race class. What's kind of the difference between the two, and what boat does your team intend to race in?
Yeah, so an open class, basically, you're just going for a good time. It's like a bucket list thing. You just wanted to row an ocean, basically. You get like 76-year-olds in those races, but you also do get some 20-year-olds as well who just want to do it just to do it. The race that I'm doing, it's very competitive. There's actually two other teams in my class that are going for a world record. So this year, it's the first year where it's primarily women, and it's also the first year where there's multiple teams in the same category going for a world record. And it's only the second year where the Pacific has been open to racing as well, so it's cool to be on the front end.
So it's not only like you're trying to just get to Hawaii, it's you're trying to beat out the other teams mm-hmm. to break that world record.
Oh, yeah. There's the world record was broken, I want to say, in like 2021 by a group of American women, and now there's three teams in 1 year trying to break that record, and it's going to be cool. It's going to be interesting.
It's a lot of competition. You guys are going to be rowing completely unassisted, but what does that kind of self-sufficiency exactly look like?
It involves bringing all of our equipment with us. We're not allowed to have any outside support at all. So we bring our own food. We bring our own water source. We have a water maker on board. If we lose power, we have a handheld water maker on board as well. So our navigation, our medical, I'm first responder certified just in case something goes wrong on the boat. We have to be completely self-sufficient and not require any outside help. If we end up getting outside help, we're immediately disqualified.
So if you make it to like day 33 and you're needing some medical attention, you're out.
We're out.
That sucks. That's brutal.
It's just a learn to deal with it kind of thing, and just holding your teammates accountable of, hey, like, I get, like, you're tired, you're sore, you've got, like, these wounds on you, like, you've got these situations going on, but, like, can you hold out X amount of days? Like, can you just hold out till we get to the finish line? Like, we went through scenarios this past week, like, all right, what if, like, teammate KP, like, breaks her wrist on day 30 and we have 4 days left until we're at the finish line? Can she go without a broken wrist for another 4 days? Because the answer is going to have to be yes.
What's something that would be so severe that you would have to pull out?
Somebody did pass away on the Atlantic Ocean this past year. And so that team did end up having to pull out of the race. Hopefully that doesn't happen. But that would probably be the only reason that we would pull out.
So that's pretty severe conditions. It'll be definitely a pretty grueling journey, as your team might face waves as high as 40 feet.
Yeah.
How do you plan to encounter obstacles like that, as well as storms and extreme weather?
This is going to sound absolutely ridiculous. My parents are so mad about it. Those are the most fun moments. We experienced it this week, and there's no other way to describe it besides absolutely terrifying and, like, so exhilarating in the same time. Like, you hop on the steering, you have to pull out your auto, like, steering system. So we have to pull out our auto tiller, and we just grab onto the ropes, and you're just trying to steer as best as you can through it. We capsize, but we resize. Like, our boat is self-riding, so if we, like, dunk into the ocean, we just pop right back on up. Absolutely terrifying in the coolest way possible. Like, you don't get adrenaline pumping like you do then. It's sick.
So, like, all your, like, medical supplies, food has to be, like, under the boat to keep dry?
Yeah, so, well, everything's just wet the whole time. So we put things in dry bags that have to be in dry bags. And then we bungee everything to the boat for, like, when we do capsize or when we do dunk into the ocean. Like, you want to make sure that you keep those things on deck. So everything is always tied down. All of our teammates are always tethered to the boat in case somebody goes flying off. Then, like, you can just, like, pull them back in.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's wild.
Has that ever happened in a rowing race where someone, like, falls out of the boat?
During ocean rowing, all the time. Coastal rowing, all the time. Flatwater rowing, not so much.
The Pacific Ocean is also the world's deepest ocean and houses the Ring of Fire, containing 75% of the world's volcanoes. Do you guys have any backup plans for encountering active volcanoes like that?
So that's more towards the Indian Ocean, where you would deal with those kind of problems. The Indian Ocean is actually the most dangerous ocean to cross. I'll get there eventually. But we're going to start with the Pacific Ocean and then hopefully hammer down the Atlantic Ocean. But I do have plans on the Arctic Ocean as well with some friends. And the Indian Ocean is one that I still am cautious of for that exact reason.
Has anyone ever rode the Indian Ocean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're crazy.
That's crazy.
Yeah. I'm telling you, I think they're crazy. So that should tell you something about it.
When do you plan to row the Atlantic Ocean?
Can't exactly announce yet, because I got some other teams that I have recently made, so it's all dependent, honestly, on the 2028 Olympic.
It's coming up pretty soon again.
Yeah.
The thing that I'm probably most curious about is what your sleep schedule is going to look like. Can you talk a little bit about that intended kind of rotation of rowing, sleeping, and eating with your three other teammates?
Yeah, so we have multiple plans for different, like, rowing numbers. We can row two up, we can row three up, we can row one up. Our most common shift pattern is two on, two off, two people rowing, two people off the oars, 2 hours of rowing, 2 hours of off the oars time. So two on, two off. And you row for 2 hours while your two teammates are spending those 2 hours either washing their clothes, eating, and by washing our clothes, I mean washing our clothes in a Home Depot bucket. So washing clothes, eating, and then sleeping. So at most, we're typically averaging 75 minutes of sleep at a time.
And that's going to be for the entire journey?
The whole 32 days.
You must be good at pulling all-nighters because I don't think I could go without more than probably 8 hours of sleep at a time.
You, weirdly enough, get used to it, but what you will never get used to is rowing at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Do you have, like, lights on the boats to help you see?
We have headlamps. So we have a headlamp and then we have a tricolored light that we pop up at night so that like shipping containers can see us. Not that they care about us, but they don't stop for anybody. And we found that out the hard way.
Oh no, that's pretty crazy. So no like actual super bright light that's guiding you along the way.
Nah, the stars get pretty bright when there's no light pollution. The moon gets pretty light when there's no light pollution, but if it's a, like, no moon kind of night, you really can't see anything.
That's scary, just, like, rowing in the dark.
Yeah, it's kind of cool, except for when it's storming. We've been through some storms at night in training, and I'd say that's the only time I was actually pretty scared, was when we were rowing through a storm at night.
Do you have, like, a medical, like, assistant boat with other people on it following you? How does that kind of work?
No. There is a sweep boat. So the race is fives, fours, trios, and pairs. You're not allowed to do a single on the Pacific Ocean because you won't get off the coastline. And basically, there's a sailboat that sweeps the race, so it follows behind the pairs. So they're the closest to safety. If you're at the front of the fleet, though, like, your best bet is just getting to Hawaii.
Can you, like, track where the other boats will be, or you just kind of have to go for it?
Not allowed to know anything.
It's crazy.
They'll tell you your position in the fleet, but they won't tell you how, like, far off you are from other boats. We are working with we're allowed to have a weather router, basically, somebody on land watching weather patterns to give us, like, the best possible route. And he's allowed to tell us basically where we are in the fleet, what position we are, and how far off we are of other boats. But the safety directors aren't allowed to tell us any of that.
So has your coach been kind of training you guys on how to navigate all of these circumstances?
Oh, yeah. He's amazing. He holds so many world records on oceans. I don't think he's done the Pacific Ocean, actually, though, just because it is a newer ocean that people have started rowing. This is only the second year of the race.
Rowing Oceans for Women is also rowing for a cause, the Women's Sports Foundation, as well as the Hawaii Domestic Violence Action Center. Can you talk a little bit about the partnership and how our listeners can also get involved?
Yeah, so we're partnered with the Women's Sports Foundation. Basically, they help girls and women who wouldn't be able to stay in sports through like funding or just like providing them opportunities that they wouldn't normally have. So that's what the Women's Sports Foundation does. And then the Hawaii Domestic Violence Action Center, I just moved to Seattle from Hawaii. I spent the past 4 years living in Hawaii. And so this domestic violence shelter actually saved my life. I was a victim of domestic violence and ended up homeless in Hawaii for a while. And while like holding a full-time job, have a master's degree, like literally probably the last person you would expect to be homeless. I was homeless due to domestic violence. And so this shelter definitely holds a special place in my heart. And I'm really excited to be working with them. We have a website where people can check out the two charities that we're working with. We have a TikTok. I run it. So if you don't think it's good, don't tell me. We have an Instagram as well. Everything is just Rowing Oceans for Women. And we just post information about the two charities, how you can get involved with them, how you can get involved in our row, how you can track us as well, things like that.
I'm so glad you're speaking about this because I think it's definitely an important issue that needs to be talked about more often.
Oh, yeah.
But I'll definitely get more people to donate, and I hope that our listeners do as well.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Thank you so much.
lastly, I want to know what your goals are and what you're kind of hoping to get out of this race.
Yeah, so when I decided to do this race, I was 2 months post-homelessness. And so for me, it was a way to prove to myself how strong I actually am. I was throwing down like a lot of ultra marathons at the time as well. And so like anywhere between 50 and 100 mile runs. And I was just like, Han, like it's time to like put your two favorite things together, rowing and endurance sports. And I guess I really did end up, I haven't even done the race yet, but I definitely did end up proving to myself how strong I am and just how you can overcome anything and how you can, like, even when you don't think that, like, you can keep going, like, there's always something to look forward to and there's always something to keep you going. And I think that's what this row has already done for me. And then I would definitely say top, like, three goals, win the race, break the world record. And then I have a two-month turnaround before I get ready for the World Coastal Championships. And that is how, if I do well, we'll make the U.S. Olympic team. And if I don't do well, I'll keep trying until I do.
Well, I can definitely say that you are a very impressive person. Lots of people will be cheering you on. And I'll definitely be following the race.
Sweet. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the radio to talk with me today. You're listening to KMIH 889 The Bridge. And now back to the music and conversation that lasts generations.